Okay.
Welcome to Super Together. I'm James Cochran.
And I'm Ginger Rothis.
And I'm not wearing shoes, and I have my feet up. I'm sitting in one chair.
You're very
and my feet
chill
are up
today.
Yeah, I'm about as chill as it gets. I find when we were going back and forth about what topic we might choose, I almost suggested what to do when you're at your wit's end.
Maybe we should do that.
Because that's part of where I feel like I am right now. And one of the things that I do is like I abandon all pretense. Like I am, and part
good.
Of it is out of necessity. So, for example, my wife and I, our life has been so crazy over the past, 10 years that I like our laundry is just out of control. Like we just, so like part of the reason you see me wearing shorts and a t-shirt is because this is literally almost like what I have available to wear. Like, you know, and it's one of those things, it's like where jeans are pretty resilient.
Yes.
You can wear jeans
multiple times
yes. between washes. But, you know, I was doing yard work yesterday and today, and they kind of like met the limit
They're
of their
done.
Resilience.
Yes. Who does laundry in your home?
Mostly me. Mm-hmm. That's a lie. It is. Lindsay's very good at initiating laundry, but her follow through is a little bit more limited.
Oh, Lindsay and I are soulmates. Me too.
I'm good at folding laundry. Mm-hmm. And like, but so, you know, so we have what we call laundry parties. And there's really, it's just like we, instead of watching a TV show in one part of the house, we watch it in the basement where mm-hmm.
our laundry room is.
And I don't know that it ever, I don't know. We don't do them with enough regularity for us to sort of keep ahead of it. We do laundry when we have to do laundry.
That's how we roll, too.
Is how our life
yes.
works.
My children now, teenagers, have learned how to do their own. That awesome. Is a whole new life chapter. So
yeah.
hang on.
Yeah.
It's going to get easier.
I hope so.
Yes.
So that's where we are.
Yes.
What we landed on, though, was you texted me with this idea of introversion, extroversion, how do we navigate differences within the space of a couple where one partner is a little bit more extroverted, the other one's a little bit more introverted. I replied with, that sounds great. Let's go ahead and take care of the next five episode ideas and make it a, you know, the big five personality traits, which in case you listener are wondering what those big five personality traits are, I'm pulling it up because I always forget. Openness, conscientiousness, agreeableness, extroversion, and neuroticism, which are very like old-timey psych words. Neuroticism you won't hear much these days.
I didn't. Yes.
We'll get into all those. But today, I think we're going to look at the differences in the introversion extroversion spectrum. So, I'm curious what made you think of this. Is there a specific story that came to mind where you said this difference is showing up in our life in
mm-hmm.
an interesting way?
Yes, it was actually in a conversation yesterday with a client whose daughter is interviewing for colleges, and she's an introvert, and the mother was saying, you know, I'm really worried about her because she answers questions like yes and no without mm-hmm. more information. And so we were just talking through how she could coach her on communication skills. And one of the things I said was tell her to not think about impressing them, but instead connecting with them. Mm-hmm. And then that led into this whole discussion on introversion versus extroversion. And then that led to me thinking about Rob and I, because Rob is more introverted. I am more extroverted. And I realize introverts and extroverts go through the world very differently.
Mm.
And I think that's something important to appreciate in a relationship is how do they see the world and how can I adjust my behaviors to meet that? Mm. So, for example, I get energy from being with people. I think quickly out loud on my feet. Mm. I don't choose words carefully. Rob gets energy from being alone with our family in a small group, and he chooses his words very carefully. And one of the communication has come up a lot. The difference in our communication styles has come up a lot because I will get frustrated that it's taking a while for him to share his feelings with me.
Sure.
And when I ask him about that, he will say, I'm thinking it all the way through to the end to make sure I am going to say the right thing, not hurt you. You know, so he's very calculated, whereas I'm thinking out loud on my feet. And that has caused tension sometimes in the way we, our styles of communication.
Yeah. Lindsay and I think I misunderstood this for a long time. Lindsay is, so when, this is a quick anecdote that for me exemplifies one particular type of thing, but for Lindsay probably exemplifies something else. I did video stuff when I was in high school. I was on like the broadcast team, and I was part of the team that like put together like the senior video where we went through and interviewed all the different seniors and, you know, said, hey, what's your favorite class? Who's, you know, what's one word that would describe your high school experience? So Lindsay appears in that video exactly one time, even though I was one of like the three people making this video and we were dating at the time. Somehow she only appears in that video one time. And it was, what's one word that would describe your high school career? And her response was books. Like, that's what she said, is books. And I think for a long time, I looked at Lindsay and thought, okay, well, she is a studious, bookish, she's gonna focus and concentrate and pay attention. She's not gonna be, you know, boisterous and outgoing and all these other types of things. And I think that that helped me characterize, okay, this is the kind of, you are more introverted. Whereas again, I was on the video team. I was in theater. I, you know, led a worship band in my youth group. You know, I was very much vocal in all of these different spaces. And it wasn't until I got to maybe when I was starting to teach this to premarital students, premarital couples, I guess would be a more appropriate way, where I started to present it to them, I started to realize, to me, what you said right at the beginning is the key definition for introversion and extroversion. And it is, where do you derive your energy? And it has less, I think, to do with what your skills are.
Yes.
Because I think I'm pretty skilled as a speaker. I can get in front of a big group of people. I can be very social and outgoing and those types of things. But if you put me in an environment like that, I am drained. I am, it is, we have this, it's kind of a joke where, you know, we'll have a game night at our house, you know, where we'll play card games and, you know, charades and things like that. And by like 9:15, I'm like ready to go to bed. Like I'm like, and Lindsay's like, just is like craving that connection with other people. And so people, we'll have people over at our house because since we have small kids, it's easier for people to come over to our house than to take our kids somewhere else or to get a babysitter. And I'll just like let people keep hanging out at my house and I'll just say, I'm going to go to bed. Like the other, a few months ago, my father-in-law and brother-in-law both came over and we were hanging out in my driveway, you know, for like a socially distanced happy hour. And again, around 9:10, I'm like, hey, I'm going to go to bed. You guys hang out as long as you want. And they stayed till like 12:30 at night. Like they just, you know, so for me, it was a really helpful way of conceptualizing that where I am, and ultimately the labels don't matter as much as what you understand about how you show up in these spaces, is that if I'm in an environment where a lot is being asked of me socially, that those are environments that are pretty draining for me. Whereas for Lindsay, she can be social, you know, I don't want to say indefinitely, but for much longer. That's more a characteristic of her personality. Now, if you look at it in terms of skills, I think Lindsay would be very anxious if you said, go give a presentation on this thing that you know a lot about. She'd get a lot of anxiety. Whereas me, I could probably do that with some comfort. And I think that's where we maybe often get confused about, A, what we're talking about, but also how do we navigate this as a couple? Because I think it's that energy piece that when I work with couples most shapes the environment. And I think where it most often comes up for me in working with couples is thinking about how they spend their social time. You know, are we going out a lot? Are we spending time with friends a lot? Are we spending time just the two of us a lot? What amount of alone time are we allotting for one another? So when you think about those differences, yeah. where have been the pinch points maybe for you and Rob?
Yeah, Rob is definitely more alone time and, you know, small groups. He can do a project alone and be very happy. I get bored quickly if I'm alone. I'm much better. Even in my work, I notice, you know, if I try to just sit and write alone in my office, I am itching for things to do. I start going on social media. I need people. But if I sit down, you know, now in a Zoom format to a live class, I'm on fire and I love it. And I, even though it's via Zoom, it's just that feeds my energy and my soul. So yes, I definitely see the energetic differences. I get sad when I'm not around people.
I think Lindsay's the same way.
Yeah. I notice I just kind of, I wonder like, what's wrong with you? Why are you in a funk? And then I think, oh, I've been alone a lot lately. That's why. So it definitely is energetic. And what makes me think about like the communication style piece was the book Quiet, which is Introverts in an Extroverted World. I think it's the power of introverts in an extroverted world. And one of the things in the book Quiet is introverts quietly process, right? So they're processing energy more quietly. They're processing communication more quietly. And I think that's where it really shows up with Rob and I in communication is his tendency to think carefully, choose words carefully, that is a quiet energy.
Yeah.
Whereas my thinking on my feet, talking, expressing myself is more of a connection energy.
Yeah. I think if I was going to, you know, maybe the first big point is that we conceptualize this in terms of, you know, energy and where and how that energy is derived and processed. And I think if there, to me, was a second big point, it is the idea that the values that we place on introversion and extroversion feel really culturally assigned.
For sure.
You know, I remember I was listening to a presentation one time at like a leadership conference, and they were talking about the cultural differences when it comes to silence in a conversation. And that in a number of Eastern cultures, there is no big deal if you ask somebody a question and they pause for 5 seconds. But watch what happens if I pause for 5 seconds right now. So I don't know about you,
My
Ginger.
My foot started bouncing. I was getting uncomfortable.
I started to get uncomfortable maybe around 2 or 3 seconds. But what we start to perceive is, and so what they were talking about in the course of this presentation was that in interviews, people who are from an Eastern country that interview in a Western country are more likely to be perceived as less competent, less confident, less able to, you know, articulate themselves, less likely to have a command of English, you know, all these different types of things that are fundamentally not true. But because of the cultural dynamics associated with extroversion is better to be able to articulate yourself quickly, share what you want to say quickly, form your thoughts without, you know, paying a whole lot of attention to how things go, versus, you know, we don't place as much value for people that are sort of quiet and subdued. And I think that this is, we will see this as true for each of these big traits that we go through, is that it can be very easy to think that because our culture values extroversion, that the person who is introverted has like some growing to do, or that they have to change in some meaningful way, or that they have to, you know, learn to be more comfortable in those kinds of environments. And I would love for couples to say that that's fundamentally untrue, that, that instead what we're looking at is, two people who engage the world in two different ways. You can almost think of it as like, you know, being short or being tall. And you don't say to the short person, you know, you need to do a better job of reaching that high shelf. and instead we say like, okay, like when you are being asked to engage the high shelf, let's make sure that you have a stool, or let's make sure that the things you need most often aren't on the high shelf. I'm thinking, but I don't know, this is more or less how Lindsay and I organize our kitchen. So that to me is, I think, the one of the keys in approaching the problem-solving dimension of this is to recognize that whether you are introverted, whether you are extroverted, it is not a, you know, mature people are extroverted and immature people are introverted or anything. Like, it's a completely separate, you know, spectrum that we would look at.
I find that to be true with Rob, and I've grown to really admire that about him. He is careful with his words, and he sees that words have power, and that has taught me to slow down and to be more careful, and to, you know, the respect he has for me in trying to choose his words carefully before he speaks. I have come to see, wow, my talking all the time and thinking that's the right approach is a really arrogant approach. I've come to see that is a superpower, and that's what the book Quiet does, is it's a superpower to be an introvert, because you're actually observing and taking in the world around you, and you're forming ideas and conclusions. And then when you speak, it's really powerful. While the extroverts are kind of spinning around in the noise and missing the point. So it has helped me to see both as great qualities, different approaches to life, but we can learn from one another.
Yeah.
And Rob would say he appreciates me stretching him to, you know, be out and doing things and move a little faster. And I approach him for slowing down our communication, teaching me to think before I speak. Those are all really valuable things. But you're right, society, you know, quicker is better. And that's not necessarily true.
Yeah. So if we're thinking about how couples can approach this process, how they can think differently about the ways that these discrepancies show up in their relationship. So I think an example of where it comes up a lot is, you know, I want to go to my work's Christmas party, and the more introverted partner says, I don't want to do that. So there is a thing that I value that requires some measure of social engagement, which I am comfortable with, but you are not comfortable with. So how do couples negotiate that process while still paying attention to their sort of individual wants and needs?
Let's answer that as an extrovert and an introvert.
Sure.
Okay, so the extrovert says, get over it. Come on, go to the party. Let's go.
And the introvert says, you go, tell them that I broke my leg.
Exactly.
And I'm bedridden.
And I'm not going.
Like
yes.
That.
Yeah. So I do think, I mean, is it okay for the extrovert to go and the introvert to stay home?
I would love it if it was more okay. I think that, and this is a, you know, this is a bias implied in the very existence of our podcast, is that our culture privileges coupled relationships versus people who are single. And so in a lot of dynamics like that, being there alone is something that, well, are they fighting? Are they about to get, breaking up?
Exactly.
Is there trouble in paradise kind of thing? And so I think that's one element of it. I also think that I'm homeschooling my daughters. I've not talked a whole lot about that on the podcast and maybe I will at some point, but, today, for our health lesson, it's a kindergartner and a 3-year-old. So really the 3-year-old is kind of tagging along. The kindergartner is the one that's actually doing the learning, but we're really just talking about, you know, parts of the body and things like that. And I was thinking, I want to start now to have a lesson about bodily autonomy and consent. And I remembered that there's this kind of funny YouTube video about consent. It's about drinking tea. Have you seen that one?
Where it's
like, if you don't want to drink tea, you don't have to drink the tea.
Yes.
Nobody can make you drink the tea. And anyway, so there's a kids version produced by the same people.
Oh, good.
Where, I mean, it's I say it's a kids version. They still use words like entitled and bodily autonomy and contracts and, but it's. It is, I think, a valuable way of teaching people that you don't have to do what you don't want to do. Now, here's the the really ironic thing about that is not 10 minutes before I showed them that video, we were playing Simon Says, where I was literally commanding them to do things with their body, touch your nose, touch your ears, you know,
great irony,
all that kind of stuff. And Evelyn talked about that. She said, like, you were telling me what to do with my body. And I was like, you know what? You're right. We got to find a different way to play Simon Says. Simon requests,
yes,
if you, should you so consent to do this particular thing. But as I thought about that, I wish that relationships felt like they had more room to say, I don't want to go.
Mm-hmm.
And here are the reasons why.
Mm-hmm.
And for the other partner to be able to say, I respect that you as an individual don't want to go, and feel comfortable allowing you to have that individual independence. Now, there are plethora examples, there's lots of examples,
yes,
of situations where, like, if I'm going to a funeral, the fact that you are introverted is something that should have less significance probably in terms of the weight of the relationship and the need for support that I might have in a space like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that all life events kind of exist on a spectrum from, you know, from funeral to, you know, work drinks with work buddies or something like that. And we have to decide as a couple what that looks like. So I think that in answer to your question that I've been answering now for 2.5 minutes, should they be allowed to say, yeah, no, I don't want to go? I think that the answer to that kind of depends.
Yes.
I would love for couples to feel more of that freedom, or at a minimum, not just assume that, like, oh, well, I have a thing. That mm-hmm. means that we're both going, mm-hmm. whether you feel comfortable in that environment or not.
And I think that's, we've said this before, but it's the discussing your needs, mm-hmm. right? And what you need to have a good night, and then the two of you discuss that. So maybe it's a compromise of, can we go for an hour, or can, you know, or you can stay home and I'll go, or you know, can we make a deal that, you know, if we do this, then tomorrow night it's all about movie night, stay at home.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think the communication of needs and that conversation is what's so important, because if we don't say, I don't feel comfortable going, and instead we go and then we're resentful and mm-hmm. upset, and our partner wonders why there's distance between us, you know, that's what leads us down a path of disagreement. Whereas if we could just say, I hate events like this. Why mm-hmm. do I wish we didn't have to go to this thing? Then you could start the conversation.
Yeah.
And I think that sometimes, you know, to your funeral example and other examples, is sometimes we do have to push ourselves out of our comfort mm-hmm. zone to support our partners. And we do a lot of things we don't want to do in yeah. a partnership. And, you know, but as long as it's balanced and both mm-hmm. of you are benefiting and both of you are compromising, then you don't have that resentment building between you.
Yeah.
But yeah. And I think Rob and I would both admit, you know, you end up making the best of it. It mm-hmm. may not be your ideal evening, but mm-hmm. together you can make the best of it. And he understands I want to float around the room and talk to everybody. And I understand he's going to choose one person and probably talk to sure. them most of the night.
Sure.
And that's just, you kind of understand how both of you are going to work the event.
Right, right. And I think that those kinds of conversations, we talked about last week, the idea of, if you want to say, when we were talking about social media and privacy and those types of things, if you want to articulate that you need a private space, mm-hmm. that's totally fine. But the best way that that shows up in a relationship is if you help your partner understand why.
Yes.
And I think that the same thing is true when we have conversations around introversion and extroversion. It's, if you don't want to go to that Christmas party, saying that you're an introvert is one way, mm-hmm. but it's also important to say, okay, you know, I've had a really long week. You know, one of the things that I have noticed about myself is how much talking I do really shapes how much more talking I want to have to do.
Absolutely.
And so I'm in a profession where I talk to people,
yes,
you know, through the course of the day. You know, I'm teaching my daughters and sometimes mm-hmm. I'm, you know, singing songs for different contexts. And I can have days where I do a lot of talking. Mm-hmm. And on days like that, if, you know, maybe I had plans to hang out with a friend or someone from my family or something like that, and I might have to say like, oh, I've reached sort of my capacity. So mm-hmm. helping my partner understand, hey, like before we decide whether or not we're going to go to this event, here's where I'm at in terms of my capacity. Mm-hmm. I'm at like 85%. So it's possible that I could go, but I probably would not be able to feel comfortable for very long. Mm-hmm. I will probably run out of steam within mm-hmm. an hour. One of the things that I will encourage couples to do in environments like this is to, before you even go, establish check-in points where you say, okay, we're going to go, and ideally, we're going to arrive at 7, and we're going to leave at 9:30. Mm-hmm. But we're going to check in at 7:45 to make sure that we're both still on the same page. Mm-hmm. Then we're going to check in again at 8:30 and make sure that we're still on the same page. And we sort of engage that process in an ongoing way so that both partners' needs are being paid attention to. One of the things that I think will happen with my wife is she gets into spaces like that and she is kind of just lost in the fun of yes. being with people.
Yes.
And I don't fault her for that. One, because that's, I think, where she derives her energy. But a lot of times we're talking about, you know, it's Thanksgiving and mm. she's seeing family that she hasn't seen, mm-hmm. you know, but one or two times in the course of the year. And mm-hmm. I want her to be able to value those relationships and be able to lean into them. But it's the type of thing where it's like, I've got to try to find a way to separate her from the people there so mm-hmm. that I can tell her, hey, by the way, I wanted to go an hour ago. Mm-hmm. And then, because I know that once I tell her that we have to go, she's going to be saying goodbye for the next hour and 45 minutes.
Exactly.
And that process is, mm-hmm. you know, sort of a process unto itself. Mm-hmm. I think, and I'll be curious when Lindsay listens to this, because I think she usually listens to most of our podcasts, what her thoughts are on this. But one of the things that I have started doing is, especially if our girls are with us, is I start packing up all the girls' stuff. I'm like taking it out to the car.
That's awesome.
To the type of thing
that's
where
the sign.
Because I know that if I let her like mm-hmm. continue to engage in a process and I don't have the girls' stuff packed up mm-hmm. that like I've lost another half hour
yes.
potentially in there.
Oh my
so
gosh,
like we are it. Okay, we're ready to go, car's running, you know, I'll start driving, you know, but I'll keep it under 5 miles an hour so that you can jump in the passenger seat.
That is awesome. You and Rob need to do a how to manage extroverted wives episode because he has things like that too. And he's taught the kids how to do it. Like if we walk in a building where I know a lot of people, he's managed their expectations. Like mom's going to talk and
yeah.
we need to go. We need to have a plan.
Sure.
Well, and then, how do you mm-hmm. extricate me from those situations too? I love it. I totally get what Lindsay does. Goodbyes do take a long time. We never want to leave the party.
Yeah. And I think that is, again, it's something that I want to make sure that we accommodate, because mm-hmm. from beginning to end, from like before the beginning when we're planning it mm-hmm. to the engagement itself mm-hmm. to, you know, when the engagement is coming to a close. I mentioned earlier this idea that we have these cultural assumptions around introversion and extroversion. And with that come cultural assumptions about, oh, you don't want to come to this Christmas party with mm-hmm. me. Does that mean you don't want to spend time with
exactly.
me? Does that mean you don't support my career?
Right.
And it doesn't mean any of those things.
That's right.
It just means like, I'm so tired of mm-hmm. looking at people's faces and I want to stop doing that right now.
Mm-hmm.
I listened to a podcast today on origami and I really want to set myself to making 1,000 paper cranes. It is, I don't know if you've, it's apparently
cool.
like an age old tradition, that's sort of meant to signify like peace
yes.
and, like you get like a wish when you're done mm-hmm. and you can, you know, generally people wish for peace of some kind. But when I saw that, I'm thinking like, that's me, like that me sitting in a basement
yes.
folding 1,000 paper crates.
Mm-hmm.
Like that is where I would derive my energy. Lindsay would lose her mind, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's disciplined enough to do it, but mm-hmm. she's not the type of person where that's going to really feed her soul.
Right.
So instead of the assumption of, you must not want to spend time with me, you must not support my career, you're trying to get me to leave, don't you understand how important these people are to me?
Mm-hmm.
The answer to all those questions is yes, I understand. Yes, I want to be with you. Yes, I want to mm-hmm. support these things that really matter to you. But like all things, I am imperfect. And one dimension of my imperfection is that this is the way I feel in these moments, is that I increasingly lose patience when I feel like I'm not being seen.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, I think, where the introversion mm-hmm. piece starts to feel most acutely painful, is that doesn't she recognize that I have got to get out of here?
Mm-hmm.
And the reality is she is so lost in the bliss of togetherness that she is not going to probably recognize that I need to go, unless we're very intentional ahead of time about saying, let's make sure that we're checking in with each other regularly. You know, if I say grapefruit and avocado in the same sentence, you know that that's the signal for we really got to get out of here. Or, you know, if I start packing up all the girls' mm-hmm. things or whatever it is.
How would you say grapefruit and avocado in the same sentence?
What are some of your favorite things to have with toast? Grapefruit and avocado. Right? Because they're both,
right.
You could do avocado or toast as a breakfast food, and you could also do grapefruit with toast or on toast.
I had a great salad today. It had grapefruit and avocado on it. That would be the clue, because you can't ask a question or you need to sure. answer it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Anyway, one of the things that I think you hit on that I really like is this idea of how the introvert may feel unseen and heard by the extrovert paying mm. attention to everybody else. And I think that's an important thing to remember too. And when we lose track of time and when we're getting energy from all these other people, it is the last thing we want to do is hurt our partner. We don't realize that's what the message is, mm-hmm. you know. So I think for Rob, I think he would now understand after 21 years together that this is not about me. It's not mm. that she doesn't want to be with me. It's that she is loving this
right,
crowd.
Right.
But that's an important piece of our personal responsibility too, is for me not to be offended by his introversion and for him not to be offended. Because you're right, we all want to be seen and heard, and it can feel like we're not getting paid attention to.
Yeah, yeah.
I think one of the things that has really helped me in learning to appreciate that our personalities are different is me asking the question, what can I learn from him?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and, you know, in observing him, what can I learn here? Instead of that helps me shift out of my way is better.
Mm-hmm.
It helps me shift into there may be something I could learn and benefit from in watching how he approaches life and how he responds to things and how he perceives situations. And I have, it's made me, I think, a more balanced person because I have done life with somebody who's wired differently.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that sense of like gratitude, that openness to learn from our partners is really key. And if you couple that with an intentionality around naming, understanding, recognizing differences,
mm-hmm.
then with all of these that we're going to be talking about, but this yeah. is, I think, especially true with introversion and extroversion, you will find that they are less a source of conflict and more a source of growth, more a source of, you know, us pulling each other out of spaces where we are inclined to grow, but also to the recognition that, you know, we are going to, you know, that my unfettered introversion or Lindsay's unfettered extroversion mm-hmm. Might not be the best things for our mm-hmm. Sort of our individual growth and our ability to see others the way that we want to be able to see them and all those types of things. So there's definitely a lot to an attitude that includes, you know, gratitude, learning from our partners, you know, and intentionality about those differences, which I think are probably the big keys. So we are... we're at 33 minutes, so awesome. We're going to stop talking. We're going to stop talking about that topic. You're at compassionfix.com
mm-hmm.
and compassionfixcommunity.com
That's
for your
right.
new community program and for your other classes. You're launching a new class soon? The
yeah,
Psalms
today,
class?
This morning. The Psalms class started this morning. So it's
wow.
You can still join us. The video, we recorded everything. So what we did this morning will be available but we're going to read through all 150 Psalms, the entire book, in 6 weeks. It's pretty cool. And so we're going to talk about how the Psalms give us permission to be fully human with God, and really permission to feel all the emotions and all the feels, all the questioning, all the doubt, all the asking God, why me? And why have you abandoned me? Why aren't you showing up? So I think that 2020 is a good year to revisit the Psalms. Sure, and there's a lot of, you know, human suffering. But what the Psalms do is make a turn toward hope and and gratitude. So they are kind of instructions to tell the truth to God, but then also trust.
Yeah. Yeah. One of my favorite Psalms, I say this sarcastically, is Psalm 119, which has more synonyms for the word rules than almost any other chapter of the Bible. It's like, oh Lord, I love your precepts. Your statutes are so awesome. I love your instructions.
That's awesome.
Your guidelines are so terrific. Like it is just.
So one of the things I like to do with the Psalms is read them in sarcastic voice. Read them in a sad voice, an angry voice, sarcastic voice. So that one's perfect for the sarcastic voice.
Yeah.
Because it's actually, we don't know the tone of the psalmist originally. Mm-hmm. We infer our own meaning into them. So if you read them in different voices, it takes on a whole new level. Like some of the really sweet, gentle ones, if you read angry, have a whole new meaning. And like Psalm 23, you know, that is such a gentle, beautiful, you can read that angry and it's awesome. Yeah. So I love that. I'm going to read 119 sarcastically now.
Yeah. So that's where we can find Ginger stuff. I don't know why I did your stuff, but you can find my stuff at talkingwithjames.com. My class, which is live now, you can go and give me money to watch it, or tell your friends to give me money to watch it. It is a 4-part class with a an extended workbook that's meant to sort of foster individual insight as well as couple insight. That's at convergecourses.com. And if you use the code LaunchParty, you get a 20. Ginger's laughing.
Awesome.
I don't know if it's coming
through. No, it was the way you said it. LaunchParty.
Yeah. Well, I almost made it Lanch Party. I don't know if you, do you ever watch The Office?
Yes.
Okay. So in when they're launching the new website, they're doing sort of a satellite launch party at the
The office. Yes.
And it says lunch party.
There's a typo.
But it's LUNCH. Hang on. That's how you spell lunch. They misspell it somehow.
I know.
Oh, yeah. It says lunch party. It says lunch party.
Instead of launch.
Instead of launch party.
Yes. Okay.
And Kevin goes, well, why don't you just change the U to an A? And then Angela goes, then it would say lunch party, Kevin. Would it really be better if it said lunch party?
I love Angela.
But I didn't make that the code because I figured that would confuse people.
That would be very confusing.
So launch party. I'm trying to get a bunch of early buzz on it. So if it's something that you're interested in,
that's cool.
That'd be cool.
Congratulations. So. That's a lot of work.
Thanks. Yeah. I was telling Lindsay today or yesterday, I was like, okay, I've outlined my next one. And she said, stop it. Like, as I outlined it, she's like, no,
take a break.
Yes.
And
like,
celebrate.
Yeah.
Accomplishment.
Yeah. We'll do that on the, I don't know, spontaneity one, probably. I don't know. One of the personality traits, whatever personality trait drives me to create and not necessarily relax or
perfect.
Rest.
Perfect. Okay, good.
So I think that probably covers everything.
Yeah, this is fun.
We'll be back next week. I don't know which one we'll do next week. We'll pick one, whichever one feels like it's most relevant. But it'll be one of the five big traits.
Awesome.
You can find us anywhere in podcast world. One of the things that I would love is if you are a regular listener to the show, tell someone you know that this is a cool show, and then they can find it wherever they listen to podcasts. You can rate us on whatever podcast service that you use. We like 5 stars. I like 5 stars.
I love them.
I don't attach my value to the number of stars that we receive. You can leave us a review. Those types of things help people find our podcast, just like sort of in their normal podcast feed type of thing. So yeah, that's our, we don't do a pitch for the podcast very often. But,
no,
you
we
know,
don't.
Tell people.
Remember the first week we launched, the recommended listening was us and Brené Brown.
Yes.
Because she launched the same week,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, and then there was also, it was also
that was so exciting.
It was a sex podcast too.
Oh,
there,
yeah.
There was another one. I can't remember which
that's
one
right.
it was.
I sent
but,
you a screenshot, I think.
Yeah, so.
That's right. It was Brené Brown, a sex podcast, and us. You
yeah,
know, we're
so,
in good company.
Yeah, we are top notch. So, all right. Well, that is all we have for this week. We will see you next time.
Be well.